Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
When you think Virginia Woolf, your mind probably jumps straight to things like Mrs. Dalloway, right?
Yeah.
Stream of consciousness, that really radical modernist style.
Absolutely. She's, you know, synonymous with breaking the mold to the lighthouse, the inner lives of characters laid bare. But that mastery didn't come out of nowhere.
Exactly. And that's why we're doing this deep dive into her second novel, Night and Day. It came out in 1919.
It's such a fascinating book because it's this bridge. It sits right between the traditional 19th century novels she grew up reading and the experimental work she became famous for.
It really is. She basically proves, look, I can do the whole Victorian social novel thing perfectly. You know, the drawing rooms, the courtship plot, the engagements.
All the conventions are there. We're right in the heart of Edwardian London, mixing with these intellectual families, especially the Hillberries. They're kind of suffocating under the legacy of this famous poet grandfather everyone venerates, right? This huge literary shadow.
Yeah.
So our mission here is to explore how Woolf uses that very familiar setup, the marriage plot, to actually critique those conventions and to really get into this search for an authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's unpack this then. What's the sort of core conflict, the central tension that really drives this quest for authenticity you mentioned?
Well, it's right there in the title, isn't it? Night and Day. The day is the public world. It's society, expectations, duty. Our protagonist, Catherine Hillberry, she's groomed for this. Daughter of a distinguished literary family, expected to be the perfect hostess, marry well.
The epitome of Edwardian grace.
Yeah.
Polished, proper.
Exactly. That's her day. But internally, that's the night. She feels completely disconnected from all the literary talk, the endless biography project about her grandfather.
So her secret night, is it that she's secretly writing poetry? Or a novel? Something artistic?
That's what you'd expect. Right. But no. And this is where you see Woolf starting to push boundaries, especially about women's inner lives. Catherine's secret passion, her authentic self, is obsessed with mathematics and astronomy.
Wow. Okay, so logic, order, the stars.
Yes. Absolute structured truth. It's like the ultimate rebellion against the sort of messy, subjective, social, and literary world she's supposed to belong to. It's her private escape into order.
And that hidden life, that night, is just fundamentally incompatible with her expected path, her day. She's engaged, isn't she, to William Rodney?
She is, conventionally engaged. And William is, well, he's not a bad person, but he's quite limited emotionally and intellectually. You get the feeling he's more captivated by the status of marrying into the Hillberry family, the poet's granddaughter, than by Catherine herself.
Yeah, the idea of her rather than the reality.
Precisely. And then into this rather static situation comes Ralph Denham. He bursts in. He's an outsider, a solicitor's clerk, an aspiring writer, definitely not from their upper class milieu.
Okay.
And he's the catalyst, really. He's intense, passionate, and crucially, he seems to glimpse something of Catherine's hidden intellectual depth beneath her reserved surface. He challenges her.
But Woolf, being Woolf, doesn't just give us a simple love triangle. There's another key figure, right? Mary Datchet.
Yes, Mary. And she's vital. She represents something completely different. She's the new woman, deeply involved in the suffrage movement, practical, independent, carving out a life based on professional purpose, not marriage.
So she offers a genuine alternative path. It's not just about choosing between two men. It's about potentially choosing a different kind of life altogether.
Exactly. Her presence makes the whole question of women's roles much broader than just romance.
So what makes these characters feel so modern, almost, even within this traditional structure? It seems to be this internal struggle, this trying to reconcile the public and private. How do their emotional journeys highlight this focus on, say, intellectual connection?
Well, Catherine's journey is central, obviously. It's this slow, painful, but ultimately powerful move from just passively accepting her role, drifting along.
Doing what's expected.
Right. To actively demanding the right to her own mind, her own self. Initially, she tries so hard to suppress her interest in maths, feeling guilty about it, trying to fit in. But gradually, she learns to value that hidden part of herself.
And Ralph. He seems like the passionate hero, but does he need to evolve too?
Oh, absolutely. He starts off almost worshiping Catherine, putting her on this pedestal, idealizing her as this, you know, perfect literary figure trapped in a cage.
So he doesn't really see her at first either.
Not entirely. His journey is about dismantling that ideal. He has to learn to see her not as a muse, but as a real complex person. Someone who argues who has these intense intellectual needs that are maybe quite different from his own. It's about moving from romantic fantasy to a more realistic kind of respect.
And William Rodney, the fiancé, he's the contrast, the conventional choice.
He really is the foil. His focus is all on appearances, on fulfilling the role of the poet's grandson-in-law. His emotional arc, if you can call it that, isn't about growth. It's just shifting sideways.
How so?
Well, when things inevitably fall apart with Catherine, he almost immediately pivots to her cousin, Cassandra Otway. And Cassandra fits his conventional needs perfectly. She wants admiration. She fits the mold. It shows that for William, the specific person wasn't the point. The role was.
That's quite damning, actually.
It is. And then there's Mary Datchet again. Her arc is fascinating because it involves romantic disappointment. She develops feelings for Ralph that aren't returned.
Oh, okay.
But crucially, she doesn't let that define her. She experiences the pain, yes, but she chooses resilience. She chooses her work, her purpose in the suffrage movement.
So Wolf validates that choice.
Completely. Mary finds this steady, comfortable warmth, as Wolf puts it, in her cause. It's portrayed as a deeply meaningful, fulfilling life, a powerful alternative to the romantic plot lines. Her strength is in her self-possession.
Okay, so with these complex inner lives driving things, the plot itself must move differently than a standard Victorian novel. You said it's not melodrama.
No, definitely not. The plot unfolds through conversations, walks, social gatherings. The real action is psychological. It starts subtly, like at an early tea party where you just sense the mismatch between Catherine and William, and you see Mary watching Ralph.
Just laying the groundwork.
Exactly. Then things intensify with Ralph's visits. He pushes Catherine intellectually, forces her to engage in a way William doesn't. But the real turning point, the moment emotion breaks through the politeness, happens outside the stifling drawing rooms.
Where?
During a walk in Kew Gardens. It's a classic Wolf-setting nature, allowing for more authentic feeling. Ralph declares his love for Catherine.
And that forces her to confront what's missing with William.
Precisely. It introduces passion, or at least the possibility of it, into her carefully controlled world. But, you know, duty and convention are strong forces, so the engagement doesn't just end there. It limps on for a while.
Hold on, though. You said this is a bridge novel, using that older structure. If Wolf is setting up this conflict, this potential passion, doesn't she need some kind of big crisis? A dramatic climax, like you'd expect.
Ah, but that's where she plays with the convention. The crisis does happen, but it's not a public blow-up or a dramatic confrontation. It's quiet. It's internal.
How does it manifest, then?
It's this slow, painful, almost unspoken realization between Catherine and William that they are fundamentally incompatible. They just can't meet each other's essential needs. It's the quiet admission of failure that feels incredibly modern. The lack of drama is the point.
Okay, I see. And once that quiet ending happens, William moves on quickly to Cassandra.
Instantly. Which, again, just underlines the superficiality of his attachment to Catherine, and that frees Catherine and Ralph. But their path isn't suddenly smooth sailing.
No.
Far from it. Their courtship is actually quite tumultuous. They start meeting secretly, often along the River Thames, which itself feels symbolic, right? Away from society, this flowing, changing element.
A space for transition.
Maybe. But they argue a lot. They misunderstand each other. There's this real fear on both sides, especially Catherine's, that merging their lives might mean losing their individual selves, their independence. They struggle to find a language for this new kind of relationship they're trying to build.
So it's not a neat, happy ever after resolution?
Definitely not. The ending is quite remarkable for its time. It's not a triumphant wedding scene. It's a tentative agreement. A realistic pact.
What are the terms of this pact?
It's about partnership based on mutual respect, on preserving individual freedom within the marriage. They accept that love isn't a destination you arrive at, but something you have to constantly negotiate, build, and work on. It's incredibly forward-thinking.
This sounds deeply relevant even now.
Mm-hmm.
So taking all this in, the characters, the plot, the unconventional resolution, what are the big takeaways? What is Wolf really exploring here using this marriage plot framework?
Well, the absolute core theme is that struggle for self-knowledge we talked about, the night versus the day. It's about integrating who you are privately, authentically, with how you exist publicly. Wolf argues that real fulfillment comes from that integration, not just fitting societal molds.
And the courage that takes, maybe.
Yes, the quiet courage to disappoint other people's expectations in order to be true to yourself. That's huge.
And clearly there's a major theme around women's lives and possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a powerful statement on a woman's right to an intellectual life, Catherine's maths, and a professional life, Mary's suffrage work. Wolf is saying a woman's purpose doesn't have to be defined solely through marriage or a man.
Which feeds into her critique of conventional marriage itself, doesn't it?
It does. She contrasts the comfortable, duty-bound, but ultimately empty marriage represented by William with the potential for something deeper. True compatibility, in Wolf's view here, seems to require this intense intellectual connection, this ability to truly communicate as equals, even if it's challenging. It's valued over, say, easy comfort or just passion alone.
You mentioned the Thames earlier. How else does Wolf use symbolism? The title itself is symbolic, but what about Catherine's maths and stars?
Oh, they're crucial. The maths and astronomy, they represent Catherine's deep need for order, logic, truth. Something vast and immutable, completely outside the messy, often trivial social and literary world she feels trapped in. It's her anchor to something real and fundamental. Her rebellion is intellectual.
And stylistically, this is where we really see the bridge aspect, right? It looks like a traditional novel on the surface.
It does. It has that linear plot, the omniscient narrator. But that narrator dives deep, deep into the characters' minds. The focus is intensely on their inner states, their thoughts, their psychological shifts.
So you're not just observing them, you're in their heads.
Exactly. You hear their doubts, their rationalizations, their hidden desires. The significant events are often internal realizations. It's clear foreshadowing of the stream of consciousness she'd later perfect. But here, it's still contained within that more conventional narrative structure. It's quite brilliant, actually.
And does she use irony? I imagine that literary world she came from was ripe for it.
Oh, there's a subtle, sharp irony, especially in how she portrays the literary establishment. William Rodney, the endless, rather lifeless work on the biography of the great poet ancestor. You can feel Wolf gently mocking the self-importance and sometimes the sheer deadness of that tradition-bound world.
Yeah, I can sense that. Are there any lines or moments that really capture Catherine's transformation? Her shift towards authenticity.
There's a powerful moment where she essentially declares her independence from societal judgment. She thinks something like, "It is a matter of profound indifference to me what people say. It is a matter of profound importance to me what I feel." That shift is everything.
Prioritizing the inner truth.
Yes. And there's another line capturing her feeling of isolation, the risk involved in choosing her own path. She had the perpetual sense of being out, far out to sea and alone. It conveys the difficulty, the scariness of breaking away.
It feels like the novel really resonates because it tackles these universal tensions. Desire versus duty, the public versus the private self, the search for real connection.
It absolutely does. It challenges you to think about your own compromises and about what real compatibility means as it's shared interests, shared values, or this deeper intellectual resonance.
And it validates that sometimes the bravest thing you can do is quietly disappoint expectations to make space for your own truth.
That quiet courage, yes.
So, wrapping up, the enduring legacy of Night and Day seems to be a powerful argument that finding an authentic partnership, or even just an authentic self, means you have to challenge tradition. You have to demand space for that secret life of the mind.
Mm-hmm. And it reminds us that finding fulfillment, whether it's through love, like Catherine and Ralph are attempting, or through work and purpose, like Mary, it isn't some final state you achieve. It's a continuous negotiation, isn't it? Often challenging, but also beautiful, requiring honesty about who we really are, especially in the night.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.